Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Turris comes in. Wide right, got around Fleury. Turris comes back. Now Smith breaking in. He scores! Craig Smith on a feed from Kyle Turris. It's 1-0 Nashville. Salamaki now skates out of the zone. Predators come back 4-on-2. Down the left wing, coming on late. Ellis with a try and deflected in, I believe, off Watson. It's 2-0 Nashville. Ronlin trying to make a pass out of the corner as the puck comes out for Ellis at the point. Duchesne up the wall, turns back inside, gives the puck down in front, and the shot of the score, and a beautiful finish. It doesn't go off his face this time. Matthias Ekholm got his stick on that puck. And that's going to do it, folks. It is indeed a shutout. Predators win this one here tonight, 3-0 at Bridgestone Arena.
And we welcome you into another edition of Morning Drive here on a Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Kale, Derek Mason, Marquise Munson with you. Braden's got the morning off. That was the gorgeous, melodious tones of Pete Weber last night on the Preds Radio Network here on 102.5 The Game. Predators defeat the Hurricanes 3-0. And boys, I know it's only preseason and the results are meaningless. They're 4-1 on the preseason. But one thing that I think you can take away, all of a sudden the power play kind of looks like a 5-on-4, 5-on-3 advantage. 3 straight games, D-Mace, where they've put one on the PP.
Well, yeah, they did. They were able to nice little nifty pass and goal. I think the pass was from Kyle Turris, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
Pass from Kyle Turris. And it was a nice little nifty shot. Did Ekholm score that one or Smith? Craig Smith scored
the power play was Turris to Smith, and then Ekholm had 2 goals.
Exactly, Turris to Smith. They had 5 opportunities to score in a power play. And, you know, they had some little hiccups during the power play here and there, some little miscues with the puck. But what I've noticed is they're taking shots. They are putting the puck on the goal, on the net. And that's what you want to do when you're in a power play, when you have a man advantage. Just put the puck on the net. Don't try to sit here and get the perfect shot. Put the puck on the net. And that's what they've been doing, you know, for the better part of this preseason. And hopefully it just continues. Pekka played superbly. Even I look at it in their goalie he played well for the most part, but then the Preds just went on a barrage. But, you know, like you said, the power play seems to have life somewhat. It has a small, faint heartbeat, and that's good.
My mom once said, she had an old adage that she would like to throw out at me at times. She would say, beggars can't be choosers. And I never really understood what that meant, but I think I'm just going to apply that now with the power play. Mm-hmm. Beggars can't be choosers. Like, we have been begging for the power play to look like an NHL power play and get out of the basement. I know it's only preseason, but 3 straight games with a power play goal. And to your point about getting pucks on net, I think if you haven't watched a Preds preseason game yet, the noticeable difference in the power play, forget results aside, is they are moving the puck quickly. Like last year, we demanded that Ryan Johansson would stop just trying to always look for the perfect opportunity and being so meticulous. They are just basically swinging it around really quickly, point to point, and they're letting it rip. So, I guess that's a credit to Dan Lambert, because if we're looking for a difference, from last year to this year, I think that's the noticeable difference with the eye.
Yeah, because what is the old saying? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yep.
So if you're sitting there trying to get a perfect shot on net, then that's a miss, and it's a win for the other team. The last thing the other team wants you to do is, you know, move it around and get a shot on puck. Just, you know, just try to get in there somehow, some way, and hopefully you can get a goal, a shot on a rebound. And it seems as if the Preds are applying sort of that, hey, listen, we're going to move the puck around fast. We're going to get it on the net, and we're going to see what happens. Because you don't have all game to set up a perfect power play. You have roughly around 2 minutes to figure it out. And if you fumbling and bumbling with the puck, you're taking yourself out of opportunities to score goals. And that's what they haven't been doing this preseason, and it's messing around with the puck. With the on the occasions they did this past game, you know, last night, but for the most part, they're putting it on net and kind of, you know, letting it go from there.
Good things happens when you put the puck on the net and you crash the net and you're aggressive and you take it to the opposition. I put up a poll question last night on Twitter at Nick Kale. I said, okay, Preds fans, how do you think the power play will do in 2019-2020 after finishing 31st last season? The options were top 10, 11 through 20, or 21 through 31. 60% say between 11 and 20, and exactly 20% say top 10, and 20% say between 21 and 31. That was just under 400 votes. If it's somewhere in the middle, if it's 14, 15, 16 after last year, I'll take that.
Oh, that would be a win. Now you can justify the move to go get Lambert. If they go from last to middle of the road, then you say it worked. What we went out and did, going to get Coach Lambert, you know, moving some guys around, it worked. Yes, we're not first. Yes, we're not in the top 10. But, you know, we went from dead last to middle of the pack. And you just tip your hats off. So, you know, it's going to be a long season. And you know they're going to have their woes here and there. But I think for the most part, if they continue to do what they have been doing this preseason, then I just think the numbers tell us that the power play will be better than it was last year. I don't know how much better, but anything is better than what they did last year.
Right. Last night was the return of the Fox Sports Tennessee telecast with our boy Willie Donick and Chris Mason. And I don't know if you've had a chance to see the new Jumbotron, but that thing is just ridiculous. We had a meeting yesterday at the arena, and you look at it, it is, I believe, 50,000 pounds. That thing is just monstrous. And you talk about upgrades, and we always compare, you know, Bridgestone and the Preds to what the Titans and Nissan don't do. I mean, you just take a look at this bad boy. I'm showing it to you right now on my phone.
Goodness.
This thing, I wish I owned a house that was big enough to house that, because I would sit in front of that thing and watch sports until my eyes bleed.
You know, sometimes that's a good and a bad, because you're almost forced to, instead of watching what's on the ice, you're almost forced to look up.
Well, the first thing we did, we went into the suite yesterday for this meeting, and the first thing you see is the thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're in the suite, nice chairs, nice tables, and the Jumbotron just hits you in the face.
Yeah.
Fang vision, just bow, right there in your face.
So you don't want to even look down on the ice.
No.
Your eyes go directly to the huge mega screen. That's what you call it. Mega screen.
Like, this is a screen that, like, Vince McMahon would love to have for, like, WrestleMania, for, like, you know, all the pyrotechnics and all the visuals.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The wrestlers come out behind.
Yeah. It was awesome, man.
It really is badass.
It looked nice.
I'm getting one of those.
Especially, like, when they show the fans, like, in the audience, and you could just see them just, like, wow, like, right there, right in your face. Dancing, singing.
Mega television.
You getting one of those?
Yeah. Mega vision.
You know how much it costs?
I'm going to get it for free.
I took a guess yesterday. I took a guess.
For free.
I said it was $100 million. I was way off.
What was it, three?
More. Five? I won't reveal the number, but it was more than five. More than five and less than 100. You do the math in between. More than 5 million, less than 100.
Oh, wow.
All right, so I got $5 on it. How much y'all got?
I got $5.
Man, you don't have $5.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
you didn't have to put that out there on blast.
I can get, you know what? I can get, because this is what they do at sports things, at sports bars. They get about 40 televisions and they put them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of do it so everything kind of comes together.
Mm-hmm.
I can get maybe like 15, 20 TVs for like, you know, $500 a piece.
Yeah. Holla at bro, man.
Yeah. I can get my 100 TVs.
Last night on the telecast, Willie Donick says to Chris Mason, look at this new Jumbotron, Mace. Can you imagine the instruction manual on that thing? And I'm thinking, now, I mean, I can't even start my own lawnmower. So I have no idea how I would even operate something like this.
That thing don't have an instruction manual.
No.
It is its own instruction manual.
It's pretty badass.
Just put it up and control it. I bet you the remote is so big. The remote is about, it's one of those remotes that just sits on the table and have these big old things you just push.
Yeah, get the Staples Easy button. All right, so the Predators win last night 3-0 against the Hurricanes. They are back in action tomorrow, and of course the preseason ends, and then the regular season will get underway next Thursday here in Nashville. All right, so we'll come back. Delanie Walker with really interesting quotes. We're going to get to that on the other side because I'm not sure if he's speaking directly to his own teammates or if he's just speaking in generalities. But it is a startling piece of commentary. We'll get to that next. Nick DeMace, Marquise Braden is off this morning. He'll be back tomorrow. It's Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live this morning from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Coming up an hour from now, we will go behind enemy lines. We get set for the Atlanta Falcons against the Titans on Sunday. John Kincaid from 680 The Fan will join us. 8 o'clock this morning, Rick Stockstill, head coach at MTSU. He'll stop by as they get ready to go to Big Ten country to take on number 14, Iowa. Joe Rexroad, Greg Wyshynski, both coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But let's get to Delanie Walker, because yesterday Delanie was sitting at his locker. The press, the media comes in. They're, you know, getting all their interviews with a variety of players. And of course, Delanie Walker, veteran presence on this team, always a thoughtful guy, had some interesting things to say regarding the way young guys handle losses in this day and age in the NFL. Here's what 82 had to say.
When I came in the league in 2006, I know that's a long time ago, the atmosphere was a lot different. You know, we were 1-2, it'd be pissed off guys walking around here, calling guys out, team meeting without the coaches. But today's football, a lot different. A lot of these guys can't take that. A lot of these guys don't like to be called out. They want to fight or they want to be traded. And that's pretty much where we're going today with this game. As you can see, the rule changes and everything is just different.
There you go. Delanie Walker pulling no punches. I got to think. Now, I wasn't there. I don't know if he was specifically referencing his team or if he's just talking about it in general. But all I know is the Titans are 1-2. And they've been very underwhelming the last 2 weeks.
Well, he gave you an insight. He said, when we started off 1-2, we were pissed. We were upset. Guys were being called out if they weren't doing their job. So, yes, he was talking to his team.
Good.
He just didn't happen to say, when we were 1-2 back in 2006, he didn't just happen to say that. They are 1-2. And you do have this new generation of player that you got to coddle. You can't directly come at them. You can't confront them in a way not to tear them down, but in a constructive way, because they don't understand constructive criticism. They look at it all as being, oh, you just criticizing me. You need to worry about what you're doing. That's how they look at it. They don't look at it as, hey, listen, I'm telling you some things you need to get better at because it helps us. They don't look at it from that standpoint. They look at it the minute you say something to me, it's, oh, you know, you can't say this to me. I mean, I'm a grown man just like you. And it's not, and that's what Delanie Walker, that's what he's trying to say. I was like, listen, we're all in this boat together, but some guys need to be held accountable. And if you don't hold guys accountable, then they run around here, and when they lose, they don't care. You know, it's just on to the next game, and they collecting the check, and, you know, as long as their little circle is okay, they're fine.
Do you think that's the issue with the Tennessee Titans right now? I mean, all we've ever heard with John Robinson is, John Robinson's a culture guy. He's going to bring in guys that are team-oriented guys. We're not going to go after this free agent or trade for this guy because it's not a culture fit. Well, here you are 1-2, and if Delanie Walker is in fact talking about the young guys on this roster that you can't go up to and say, hey, dude, I need you to do better. I'm holding you accountable because of this, you know, well, I'm going to fight you or I want to demand a trade or any of this. I mean, then do we have a culture problem with the Titans?
A culture in regards to it being bad, like just a bunch of knuckleheads, no.
Because there's a lot of leaders on this team, right?
Yeah. Well, we would think they are leaders.
Delanie, Woodyard.
Yeah. But, you know, even with
Taylor those, to some extent.
Yeah, even with those guys, you got to be judicial in how you say things to those young guys because they're in the locker room with them, so they know if they can get on them or if they can't. And if you feel you can't get on a player, it's like your hands are tied. You know, the coach ain't going to sit there and berate a player. He's not going to do it. He's not going to call a player out consistently. That's up for other players to do. Calling somebody out is not the job of the head coach. You know, the head coach, he has to coach everybody, and he has to make sure everything is done correctly. But his job is not to get up there and start calling people out. It's the guys in that locker room holding each other accountable. Yeah, you're not doing your job. You know, it's not that I'm sitting here trying to, again, I'm not trying to break you down or anything. I'm just telling you, you're not doing your job. And if you're not doing your job, then either you need to do it better or we need to get somebody else.
So let me go back and let's actually pinpoint one guy that's struggling right now, Adoree Jackson, having all sorts of issues, whether it's coverage, dropping punts, you name it. And he's clearly lacking confidence right now. If somebody on the Titans roster of the leadership group, whether that's Delanie, whether that's Logan Ryan, because he's in the same position group as Adoree, Wesley Woodyard, if somebody would go up to Adoree Jackson and demand more accountability out of him, is that something where the player in 2019 is out of line and doing? And how would that be back in your day? Like, if somebody was struggling on the Ravens and Ed Reed went up to them, would Ed Reed flat out get into their face and say, like, dude, I need you to get going?
Yeah, he would.
And they wouldn't get offended by
that? No, I mean, they might get upset for a minute, but then they look at where the message is coming from. They look at the messenger and they say, you know what? Damn, he's right. We're talking to a all-pro, all-defensive guy. A guy that, you know, will go in the Hall of Fame, and I'm talking the time he was playing, a guy that will go in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And if he's telling me something that I'm not doing, then I need to do it. I would do that with the receivers in the room. Like, listen, we need to step up. We need to go out there and do our job. You need to play better. You need to play bigger. And they respected it. You know why? Because I went out there and I did my job. I did it the way it was supposed to be. I practiced hard. You know, I did all the things that the organization wanted me to do. So they looked at it as, you know, if anybody can say something, he can say something. And they didn't take offense to it. That's why, you know, the guys like, Delanie can say it. Because that's one guy. Now, I mean, Wesley Woodyard's another. And there are other guys. But that's one guy that I know that is walking in that building and doing everything he's supposed to do with Delanie Walker. So when he walks in and say, you need to get this straight. Everybody should listen.
All right, let's get your reaction to that. 615-737-1025, the number. 737-1025, the number. What do you make of Delanie Walker's comments? We'll play them for you again right now. Again, here's Delanie Walker yesterday in the locker room talking about the way players react to losing games.
When I came in the league in 2006, I know that's a long time ago, the atmosphere was a lot different. You know, we were 1-2. It'd be pissed off guys walking around here, calling guys out, team meeting without the coaches. But today's football, it's a lot different. A lot of these guys can't take that. A lot of these guys don't like to be called out. They want to fight or they want to be traded. And that's pretty much where we're going today with this game. As you can see, the rule changes and everything is just different.
So we'll take your calls on that, 737-1025. And I think he's right. I think today's athlete, and even not even in professional sports, just in any walk of life, when you question somebody else's work ethic these days or lack of execution or whatever it is, they get so offended. And it's like, no, we're talking about the greater goal here, the end result as a team, as a unit, as a, you know, whatever line of work you work in with a group of people. And people just can't take it. We really do have a soft culture these days. At least in my eyes.
No. I think it is. You try to.
People don't like being singled out.
People don't like to be singled out unless it's for something good. If it's for something good, then they love to be singled out. But if it's for something not good where they need to improve, they don't like to be singled out. They don't like to feel, they don't like to be felt as if someone is correcting them. This is a society of uncorrectable people.
Bless you.
Excuse me. Thank you. Uncorrectable people. It's, you can't say anything to me. Worry about your job. Don't worry about mine. No, what you're doing does it directly affects me. So I need to worry about your job because if you're not doing what you're supposed to do on the other side, then it affects what I do on this side. And you're right, a guy like Adoree Jackson. I mean, I don't know. You know, that's a guy you just got to call out. You know, again, I've had guys in my receiver room where I had to say something like, you need to play better. It wasn't like I was, you know, browbeating them or, you know, scolding them like they were some kid. But what I was saying was, you need to play better, basically. Listen, you got the talent. They're out. They're putting you out there for a reason. Now go out there and perform. It's easy, man. This is a game you've been playing your whole life. What makes it so hard now? Because you're getting paid a lot of money?
Mm-hmm. I think we just live in a day and age, too. And I think fans also have to kind of understand. And if you know, fans want the players to be in as much pain from a loss as a fan. It's like, you're a diehard Titans fan. You go to the game at Nissan Stadium where you spend 3.5 hours on your Sunday and you watch it and you're cursing. You throw your remote. You're ticked off. You don't want to talk to your wife after the game because they blew a game they should have won. You know, a lot of that's overreactionary stuff. At the end of the day, it's just a game. It's just entertainment. But fans want the players to feel the same pain they do. And you lived it. So maybe you think, you know, it's a bit of an overreaction. But I think it doesn't resonate well with a fan when a player just says, yeah, we're on to the next one. But that's the approach you have to have as a pro athlete, right?
I mean, you have to have that mentality of, let's move on to the next game. But in moving on to the next game, you got to get those things corrected. Because if you move on to the next game and don't get things corrected, then you're going to have the same problems. Fans just want you to be upset. They don't care if you correct it or not. They just want you to be upset. They just want you to give the picture of you being upset. If you smile while you're losing.
Oh, they hate that.
It's like, seriously? Okay. I'm smiling to keep from crying.
Like, if the Titans would lose to the Jaguars 24-14, and then as soon as the game is over, the camera shows Taylor Lewan hugging Jalen Ramsey and smiling. Fans hate that.
Oh, they do. But they don't understand, man. It's, once all that's over with, you have friends on the other side. You give them a hug and you go about your business. Now, I'm not going to sit here and be partying the next same night and out social media and all that other stuff. But, you know, I respect the guys on the other side. You know, I'm say hello or whatnot. Sometimes I might not even say hello. Sometimes I might be that upset and I just might go to the locker room. And there's been days where I've done that. Just go straight to the locker room.
But even then, they'll look at you like, oh, he just walked to the locker room, didn't shake anybody's hand. Disrespect and all that. But this sport is really, everybody's still buddy-buddy. Like, everybody thinks that, like LeBron James is enemies with certain players. And no, it's like, it's everybody's friends in this league. At the end of the day, you still want to look out for the guy that's on the other side, but obviously fans don't see it that way because fans look at it as, I don't like fan bases from this end, so I look at it completely different. But at the end of the day, we all come from the same area. Same thing with college. Mm-hmm. If you get recruited in the state of Alabama and I go to Alabama and you go to Auburn, I'm not going to wish ill will towards you, even though, you know, Auburn fans are going to wish ill will on Alabama and vice versa. But I'm not going to, because at the end of the day, we came from the same state. We're all playing the same game. So I think fans have the fan mentality, as in players just have the mentality of, we're all just one at the end of the day.
7371025, the number. Corey's going to lead us off here on Morning Drive. What's going on today, Corey?
Hey, guys. As far as Delanie Walker's comments, I mean, I think he's pretty spot on. I mean, you need to be able to talk to each other and say, hey, you know, this is what I see. I you can't see what you're doing through your eyes. I don't think you're making mistakes on purpose. And I think you're better than you're playing. You know, are you going to prove me right? Or are you going to prove me wrong? This is how I'm trying to help you get better. In today's generation, you know, they think everything is, you know, breaking him down. It's like, I want you to prove me wrong. That's why I'm telling you. If I didn't care and want you to get better and help us be better, I wouldn't say nothing. I'd just go about my business. And as far as, you know, the fan reaction and stuff, I don't want to see people not, you know, smiling or whatever, even if they lose. I want them to show good sportsmanship. But I don't want them to be lackadaisical and be like, oh, well, we lost another, but hey, my check cleared. You know, I want them to expect, you know, the kind of performance that we expect and not be satisfied with just getting a paycheck. But I expect them to blow up and, you know, tear apart the locker room, you know, when you lost in a game in overtime by 1 point.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, Corey, no, I'm with you. We appreciate the call. 737-1025. Let's get more calls on this when we come back. Titans fans, and really even sports fans in general, do you think athletes care less today about losing? Do they not feel the pain like you do as the fan? 737-1025. We're back after this on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 1025. The game, Nick DeMace, Marquise Braden's got the morning off as we are discussing Delanie Walker's comments about the differences in 2019 as opposed to 2006 when he came into this league with the way players react to losing 1-2. Basically, it feels like he was Mike Singletary yesterday without losing his mind. Remember Mike Singletary 15 years ago with Vernon Davis?
What?
He might have been on that team.
I think he was on that team. I think he might have been a rookie on that team. So he understands, you know, can't win with them. Can't coach them. Can't do it. Won't do it. Mm-hmm. I want winners.
Yeah.
And listen, Mike Singletary was right. You know, he was right. Michael Singletary comes from a place where we call it how we see it. There's no pulling punches. I'm telling you because I care and I want you to get better. I would be complicit if I'm watching you do something and I don't say anything. I'm complicit to you continuing to mess up.
Yeah.
I need to tell you at least so you can try to fix it.
737-1025. Chad in Franklin is next on Morning Drive. What's up, Chad?
Not much, guys. Just driving into work. Love the show. First time caller to this show.
Appreciate it.
So there's a couple of different ways I can go here. I'm going to try to keep it short. I think from a fan's point of view, you know, the majority of fans like me played youth sports or college sports, high school sports. And, you know, you do it for the love of the game. And you realize later on in life that the lessons you learned about hard work and getting off the bench to get into play because you love it and you live and die by the win or loss, you know, you can extrapolate all those experiences and knowledge and put it into life, into any job that you do. So from a fan's point of view, I think a lot of us see athletes not taking it seriously and think about those days that we had when we were younger. But from a business point of view, I'm a professional musician. And people get angry at me because, or think I'm weird because I can't listen to music anymore on an emotional level because it's all analytics and what happened with this song here and on this fret, what key it's in, the modulation they went to, the beat. You know, it's all analytics. It's a job to me now. I can't listen to music emotionally. And I think, and D-Base can probably tell us more about this from this point of view, but once it becomes a job, it's just different. You're paying your bills with this now. And your mentality changes once it becomes your job. I don't know because I never got to that level, but D-Maze could probably explain better. I'll hang up and listen.
Chad, we appreciate you checking in. But you never lost the love of the game because it became a job, though, right? Until maybe the end?
Until the end. And when it became, because I've always said this, because I started playing football not because, I mean, I love football, I enjoy football. Having older brothers, it's like one of those things, a rites of passage. That you got to play a sport, and it was just so happened all my brothers were good at football and running track and, you know, baseball or whatnot. So it was sort of like this, being a younger brother was this rite of passage. You have to do this because you're amongst the brothers, the Masons, and got to do all this. So I enjoyed playing football. But to me, even in high school, to me, football was always just a game that I enjoyed doing. It wasn't work. I didn't see it as work. But when I got in college, after my second year, I realized that I looked at it from the standpoint of, now I'm playing my way into the NFL now. Now it becomes, it's not quite work, but it's not quite fun either. I'm in that middle space where It's a little bit of both.
It's not an extracurricular.
Exactly.
Anymore.
It's right. A little bit of both because now I see a true potential of me making it to the NFL. So everything that I did on the field, I thought about that. Like, okay, I need to get better because this is my end goal. And once I got in the NFL, you know, it was always fun to me. There's probably only one time where I saw it as work early in my career and it stressed me out. And then after that, you know, I got some words of wisdom and said, listen, you know, don't let anyone steal your joy. Go out here and play this game the way you love playing it, like you did when you was a little kid. So to me, translation, go out there and play it. It's a game. Play it. Have fun. Don't treat it as work. And when I didn't treat it as work, I played much better. Mm-hmm. A lot of stress was off my back. I didn't worry about paying the bills. I knew if I performed on the field and had fun, the bills were going to be paid. It wasn't until my last year where it became, you know, I just don't want to be here. It became work. Every day became work, and it became less enjoyable. The games became less enjoyable. Winning and losing became less enjoyable. Winning became less enjoyable. Losing just became downright just, ugh, I can't wait till this crap is over.
Mm-hmm.
So he's right. I mean, it all depends on how you look at it as a player. That's the way I see it. It all depends on how you look at it. Yes, you want to treat it like a game and you want to have fun, but knowing still you have a job to do, and the better you perform, the better you get paid. That's just the way it is, and the better your team is.
But in this day and age, though, like in the college ranks, you can, you know, be hellfire and brimstone head coach all you want, but even guys like Nick Saban have, you know, softened up a little bit and adapted to the modern athlete. But it feels like in professional sports, the day and age is of, you know, Mike Singletary and Dick and all of those guys just ranting and raving. That message goes stale really quickly. And let's face it, while we sit there and say the owners have ultimate power, when it comes to players versus coaches, it feels like in a lot of sports the players do have the power, because if the coach loses the locker room and the message is lost, well, who's gone? The players aren't gone because the players are harder to ship out with contracts, some of which are guaranteed in certain sports. What happens when things go awry? The coach gets whacked.
But do you think that's the issue, though? Because obviously, and you look at different sports, but players kind of run a lot of these sports, especially when you look at the NBA side of things, to where the players are pretty much the top tier. So maybe some of these coaches are just afraid to, you know, say certain things to their players, and then all of a sudden you got a big-time player in like a LeBron James or something that doesn't want you there or doesn't want to be there, and that player can control the destiny that you have with this team. You say something to me, I may leave. I may just ask for a trade, or I may be like Anthony Davis and I may sit out a whole season and then I'll leave afterwards. And that will affect your job. So maybe some of these coaches are just kind of like throwing their arms up, like, I don't want to say anything that would offend one of these players, because then all of a sudden I could be out of the job and not them, because I'm pretty sure the owner would choose a big time player over choosing me in a heartbeat.
Well, I think nowadays, at least in the pro ranks, because college is different, you got to do recruiting. In the pro ranks, it's not so much X's and O's anymore. It's ego management. You got to be able to massage egos of certain players and know what buttons to push and what buttons not to push. Because if you are constantly with, and we mentioned this with Peter LaViolette. You know, Peter LaViolette, everybody, Lavi's got a shelf life, 4 or 5 years, then he loses the locker room or the message goes stale and his time is up. You got to be able to adapt and evolve as a coach. But the whole thing with the players these days, I agree with Delaney. Like, some of these guys, it's just like, you know, I almost feel like they're more worried about their brand than they are the bottom line of the business.
That's why it's almost, when you criticize people as we do at times, talk show hosts, it's, you know, sometimes you try to do it because you don't want the guys like, man, if he hears this, well, maybe he's going to, you know, go off or whatnot. And I think sometimes talk show hosts, whether it be on television or on radio, they kind of hold back because, one, they want to be able to get an interview, or they don't want the guy to tweet at them or whatnot. But my whole thing has always been, even when I was playing, like, if you call it out and it's happening on the field, you have every right to call it out. I need to just play better. If I drop 3 passes in a game and you write about it, and you say, oh, Mason was horrible, he dropped 3. I'm going to say, you damn right I was horrible. What else are you supposed to say?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he dropped three passes, but, you know, he played good. He ran a good route. He got to where he's supposed to be, but he dropped the ball. Don't worry about it. No, call it how you see it. And I will understand it. I don't think players nowadays, here's their whole problem. Player nowadays, say boy or girl, this is their whole thing. When I do well, I want you to praise me, praise me, praise me until you can't praise me no more. I want everybody to know I'm doing something well. Everybody, say it to the cows come home. The minute I do something wrong, please don't say anything. I don't want anybody to know that it was because of me that interception was thrown. It was because of me that sack happened. Don't say anything. Shh, don't say anything. That's how they are. Praise me when I'm doing something well, but when I do something bad, please don't. I don't want to hear it. Don't say nothing about it. And it shouldn't be that way.
No, you're right. But there is one scenario where I will defend the player that I think is completely overreactionary from fans and media. Remember a couple of years ago in the NBA playoffs, I believe it was the Western Finals, when the Rockets either blew a big series lead and James Harden had one of the most awful games of his career where he looked totally out of it. He was like 5 for 30. I mean, they got blown out. They were knocked out in 5 games. I forget what the specifics were, but that night when Houston's season ended, James Harden went out to some club, some establishment, and was having a good time. And of course, TMZ and the social media sphere got a hold of it. And they're like, oh, look at James Harden. 12 minutes after losing and ending his season, he's out having a good time. And I'm thinking, like, well, what's the guy supposed to do? Should he go home and sit on his bed and cry?
Yeah.
Like, that's where I think the media is asinine.
That's what fans want to do. Some people...
Should he lock himself in the basement for a week?
Nah. I mean, and some guys that have been at this a long time, they react to things differently. And, you know, James Harden, maybe he wanted to go blow off some steam and have a few drinks and let it be that. Some guys just go home and relax. You know, I was the guy that, you know, win or lose, it was after the game, go to a certain establishment, have a drink, eat dinner, and then go home. That's just how it was. Just go home. And I really didn't want to be bothered with a lot of people. You know, when I was married, it was get in the car, fuss at the wife, not fuss at her about her or anything or the kids, just fuss about the game. And she would listen to me all the way home, just fussing about the game, win or lose.
Marcy, did you see that Kyle Bowler missed that sluggo on me?
Ugh. Just fussing about the game.
I was open, Marcy.
But then once I get home, I pour me a nice little drink, you know, sit on the couch, and that was it. I was done with it. Like, I'm done with this. I'm not bringing all this crap home, you know?
When you played in the early window, like the 12 o'clock game, and you got home, did you watch the NFL after the day was over for you?
It all depends on who was playing. If it was a divisional team, then yeah, the Browns, Steelers, Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Then if we didn't play them, then yeah, I would watch.
All right.
But other than that, man, I tried to stay so far away from football. Once I got off that football field, it was pathetic. I didn't want to have no parts of it, man.
All right, we will take your call. 737-1025, the number, 615-737-1025. We're going to go behind enemy lines, top of the hour, as we'll head to Atlanta, get a preview on the Falcons, who host the Titans on Sunday. Back after this on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Very fitting song to come back to. Lifestyles of the Rich and the Famous. Delanie Walker, sick of them, because all they do is complain. Or maybe they actually don't. They don't complain. They don't take losing seriously enough. 615-737-1025. Nick DeMace, Marquise with you. Brayden's got the morning off. We will go to Atlanta, top of the hour, talk to John Kincaid from 680 The Fan, get you a Falcons perspective on Sunday's game against the Titans. But Thursday night football tonight, short week, of course. I hate Thursday night football. I think it's a terrible idea. It's not a good product. Player safety, I don't want to hear about it. The league doesn't care. All they want to do is get revenue and ratings. But all of a sudden, you look at tonight's game, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Green Bay Packers, and we are now at coming up on the final game of the first quarter of the season. And dare I say it, and I think Green Bay is going to win tonight, and I think they're going to win pretty comfortably, Matt LaFleur is going to be 4-0. Matt LaFleur is going to be a 4-0 rookie NFL head coach. I know he's got Aaron Rodgers, but Green Bay has underachieved the last couple of years, And the former Titans OC might be in an elite group right now of when Sunday comes to a close and we're through a quarter of the season, D-Mace. Matt LaFleur might be one of a handful of guys coaching an undefeated NFL team.
Yeah.
Should that tick off Titans fans?
And you know, the bad part about it is that the quarterback is not having a good season. He's not having the season that we see typically he has.
They're doing it with defense.
Yeah, they're doing it with defense. If you see Aaron Rodgers and you see his numbers compared to what they were last year at this time, they're down. But they're doing it with the defense. And I think a reason that they're down is because they're trying to get used to, I think everyone's trying to get used to this new offense and the way things are ran. For so long, they've been in, you know, one offense. And Aaron Rodgers has been able to thrive. But in this offense, it's a little bit different. Yeah, they could end up 3-0 after this, Marco.
4-0.
And Titan fans, then what?
I mean, I'm not sitting here saying, like, I miss Matt LaFleur. I don't know that anything would be different on the Titans' bottom line. But it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, we criticized LaFleur last year. We questioned him because of the affiliation of who he worked for in previous stops. And he was labeled this boy wonder. And, yeah, now you inherit Aaron Rodgers. But it's like, you know, it's not like Matt LaFleur and the Packers are scoring 34 points a game. I believe they both of the outside linebackers that we wanted here in free agency, Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith, both went to the Green Bay Packers this offseason. And now the Packers, all of a sudden, for the first time, and it feels like it may be close to a decade, have a viable defense.
Yeah, they do. And you know, they're doing just enough. This is not, again, this is not the high scoring offense that's throwing the ball around the yard like we've seen before with Aaron Rodgers. They're figuring it out on offense, scoring just enough points, and then on defense, they're getting turnovers, they're playing real good stout defense, and they're winning in spite of the offense. They're winning in spite of their, you know, soon-to-be, whenever he retires, Hall of Fame quarterback. They're doing it while the offense finds its footing. And that's a good thing for LaFleur. I think he's done exactly what any coach wants to do. Put together a good group of staff members and allow those coordinators to do their job.
Yeah, but how much of that is the competition? Because you saw that first game against the Bears. That was sloppy. We saw how the Bears played on Monday night. And then Minnesota, yeah, you can kind of give them that win because Minnesota's a pretty good team. But then you had a Denver Broncos team that lost their first game to the Raiders. Joe Flacco, there's still questions around him as quarterback. So Matt LaFleur maybe just be getting lucky in these first three games to where he's played competition level that hasn't really been up to par.
No, see, I disagree with that. I mean, you're 2-0 in your division. You're doing what you're supposed to do. You're winning division games. I mean, Minnesota is a playoff caliber team, although I think Kirk Cousins is a bit of a fraud. The Packers-Bears game was ugly, but it was a preseason opener. You take that win any way you can get it. And who was the other one? Denver?
Denver.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Denver, you know, Denver's mediocre, but they've got some players, though. I mean,
they've got players on defense, and yeah, and I understand.
Don't disrespect Flacco.
Yeah, disrespect Flacco. Now, come on.
Yeah, but that's Derek's boy. Hey, I mean, man. Joe Flacco and Joe Burrow. If there's a guy named Joe at quarterback, D-Mace loves him.
Hey, I'm taking him.
Joe Montana.
Give me all the Joes, and I'm taking them, okay? No, I mean, the Green Bay Packers under Coach LaFleur, they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do to win football games. The offense is scoring just enough and scoring at the right time to win ball games. We wish you could say that about the Tennessee Titans because the defense have put them in position to win ball games, and they've only won one out of the three ball games that the defense have pretty much went out there and held teams in check.
615-737-1025. Adam is next on Morning Drive. What's going on, Adam?
What's up, fellas? Yeah, LaFleur, he's a genius, man. You see how stupid that sounds? He's a genius. He is not a good coach, man. He's an awful coach, and he's destroying Rodgers in that offense, and they really have no excuses not to be good. It looks like our offense last year. It looks like the exact same playbook. So glad to see he's sticking with it, man. I'm glad he's not here. We got our own problems. I don't think he would have made a huge difference. To be honest with you, he's not going to protect the quarterback. So, yeah, no, man. I honestly think that defense is pretty good in Green Bay now, but it's not LaFleur. LaFleur's garbage.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Adam. I think it's a lot to do with the defense. You have a guy like Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. I'm not saying I miss Matt LaFleur. It's just, you know, kind of like that jilted lover. When they leave, they move on. All of a sudden, they're having success. They've got happiness, and you say, maybe I should, you know, did we screw something up here? What would it be like today if they were still with me?
You want that old thing back.
I just think the Packers tonight are going to hammer the Eagles. I think the Eagles, and it kills me to say it as a Philadelphia fan, I think the Eagles are in trouble. They've got injuries. They've got holes. They've got issues. They've got all their receivers hurt. Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson. All of a sudden, those guys that are all in their 30s, mm-hmm. they look like they're in their 30s now.
Yeah, pretty much so. So, well, I mean, we'll see. I know many people don't like LaFleur out there, but hey, he's doing exactly what he's laughing as of now. He's laughing because this team's 3-0.
Yep. All right, we will come back and kick off hour number two with our buddy John Kincaid from 680 The Fan in Atlanta. We'll get a Falcons perspective on the game against the Titans this Sunday. Both teams, 1-2, desperate to avoid a 1-3 start. We'll head to the ATL next on Morning Drive.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.